You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Chicago White Sox edition. I'm Anthony Cashman, joined by a slightly, or maybe more than slightly, under the weather, but still up to podcast par, Scott Merkin of MLB.com, and talk about this White Sox team trying to make the most of this September and this season, where obviously not a playoff factor, but an important bridge season for them. Merk, another guy who's battled some, not illness, but injury, is Paul Konerko. It sounds like he'll be back for the weekend series against the Rays, if I'm not mistaken. Is that how things are looking at this point?
That was his goal right along, was, you know, to – I mean, it really wasn't like he was taking, you know, 20 games and reducing it to three. It was probably, as he said originally, you know, five or six games that he was going to play and reducing it to three, maybe four. I would think Tampa is the target just because he does want to play a few games or get a few at-bats and see how it goes, see what happens when he jams himself or when he gets a ball at the end of the bat, how the hand feels. He broke the he fractured the sesamoid bone in his left hand, and just to see how it responds, because, you know, he's going to get out there the last weekend. The Sox finished with four games at home, and September 27th is Paul Konerko Day at U.S. Cellular Field. So he will be out there, I would guess, with certainty for that Saturday and Sunday. And the Sunday might be an inning or two. But knowing Paul, he wants to check a few things beforehand. So I would say, if not Tampa, for certain that Detroit series, he will play on this next road trip for sure.
That's great to hear. You know, as we're bidding adieu to Paul Konerko, we're also thinking a lot about the future, and right. A big part of the White Sox present and future is that top of the rotation with two of the better lefties in the American League, Chris Sale and Jose Quintana. First of all, let's talk about Sale, Merk. You know, you look up here at the end of the year. It's not that we've ignored Chris Sale by any means from a national perspective, but his season in some ways does sneak up on you a little bit, because there's been a lot of attention obviously paid to Clayton Kershaw in the National League.
Right.
Felix Hernandez has long been considered the favorite for the AL Cy Young, and Sale missed that time earlier this year with the arm injury. But, boy, an ERA, as he goes into his next start, as we record this, he's got an ERA at 1.99. Last time, first time since 1978 that an American League lefty has a chance to be the first American League lefty.
I think was the last one, right? You did it. I think Pedro is the last one overall in the American League to go sub two in a season. I mean, just sub two in the American League, Anthony. You know how ridiculous that is. And like, you know, with all due respect to Felix, he's not too far behind. I think he's like, what, 2-2-1 or somewhere in that range, 2-1-9. So it's not like, you know, Sale is lapping the pack. But I think what you pointed out earlier is totally accurate. You know, he missed the equivalent of about six starts with the flexor muscle strain. And that probably is going to – and the fact the White Sox just aren't a good team, that's probably going to end up costing him the award. But, again, it's kind of like last year. I thought Max Scherzer got a raw deal last year because he actually won a lot of games but also had great numbers. And we all know how the win is now, you know, the worst stat in the history of baseball for a pitcher. But I still think that he deserved it because he won a lot of games, but he also pitched great. And I think the same thing for Felix. You know, Felix has pitched great. So it's not like – if Felix wins it, an undeserving player is getting it. But Chris Sale has been phenomenal. I mean, you can speed up a lot of rebuilding or reshaping or whatever you want to call it processes if you have a guy like Chris Sale at the top of the rotation.
Yeah, and one thing, and again, I'm firmly in the camp of King Felix is the Cy Young winner, unless
right. I would agree with you too.
Last 2 weeks, and I might even put Corey Kluber ahead of Sale just because he's had the full season. But having said that, one thing I like to look at for the pitchers is adjusted ERA, baseball
right.
reference, post that, the ERA plus. And it's interesting to look at Sale's mark going in his next start is 196. So basically that's, you know, 96 points above league average. Hernandez is 173. And I think that just speaks to the big picture point with Sale is he pitches in a ballpark that's a little, maybe a lot more tougher on pitchers than Safeco Field, where Felix pitches.
those park factors are a big part of that. I think that kind of adds to the allure of what Sale has done this season. He's pitched in the American League, pitching his home games in U.S. Cellular Field. For him to do what he's done is even more impressive when you consider that backdrop.
No question about it. You know, the funny thing is, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the ballpark hasn't seemed to play as huge this year, I think just because of the goofy weather in the Midwest. Sorry, it's small this year. It's played a little bigger this year because of, I think, just the weather. But you don't see as many, you know, this last week we had a few, but you don't see as many like 5 or 6 home run games or as many balls that you look at and say, geez, that's a fly ball to right, and ends up 10 rows deep in the right center field stands. Right center is really the kind of wind tunnel in U.S. either. But that's not taking anything away from Chris. I mean, Chris is, I think not only has the great stuff, some of the best stuff in baseball, you know, probably right behind Clayton Kershaw in terms of best lefties in the game. I mean, you know, right up there in the team photo for best starters overall. But I think he's learned about himself a little more, and I think he handles things. I don't want to say he ever handled it bad, but I think he really has kind of become a veteran. You know, he just understands that. A great example is he had that game in Anaheim earlier this year, cruising along, gets into the eighth, and I think he literally gave up 5 runs on 5 hits, including a Mike Trout grand slam to end the rally. And he was upset when he left. I think he hit a couple light fixtures on the way out, but after the game he had calmed down, and he kind of can separate things a little bit, you know, and I think that's a good guy to have at the top of your rotation. And really, people have talked about him becoming kind of the leader with Konerko gone, but he will be one of the leaders, and there's no question he is that with the pitching staff right now.
You know, if Sale kind of falls a little under the radar just as a product of being on a, you know, a sub-500 team, then Quintana really falls under the radar as a product of being in the shadow of Sale in that rotation. But his last start against the Twins, 7 innings, strikeout 13, struck out 6 in a row at one point. And going back to June 19th, which is a, you know, pretty sizable sample, he's got a 2.74 ERA. So it's a little unorthodox that their top two starters are both left-handed, but if it's those two guys putting up a 1.99 ERA, or in Quintana's case, a 2.74 ERA over a span of a few months, I'm sure the White Sox will take that.
Well, but before we go to Quintana, I just happened to call it up here on Baseball Reference. Chris Sale, lifetime at U.S. Cellular, 27-14, 2.72 ERA.
Wow.
That's pretty darn good. That you're taking care of business if you're doing that at USA. Mark Burley used to be like that, where he just, you know, had what it took to succeed there, and that's a big part. But, yeah, Quintana, I think, you know, gets hurt by the fact that he's got, like, 39 no decisions since 2012, which leads baseball. And it's interesting because he's another guy who is really, you know, he was given up by the Yankees and a couple scouts, you know, from the White Sox. Duraka Shaheed was one of them, I know, that kind of found him, you know, scouting him and recommended the Sox to sign him. And, boy, it's been, you know, one of their great under-the-radar pickups. And the strange thing there is, you know, if Carlos Rodon breaks camp with the team next year, then you have 4 lefties and maybe Noesi or, you know, maybe another starter they go out and get who will be a righty. But here's the thing, and you can chime in on this, do you go with 4 lefties as long as they're good? You know, Don Cooper, the pitching coach of the White Sox, and Rick Hahn have always said, you know, we'll take 6 lefties if they're accomplished. Or do you need to trade one of them and get another right-hand starter in there? And here's the thing, you're not going to trade Sale. You're not going to trade Rodon. John Danks, who's a solid innings eater, if not having the year he wanted, has $28 million left over 2 years, so it's going to be very tough to trade him. Mm-hmm. So then do you look at Quintana, who would get you a huge haul in return because he's got such a team-controllable contract right now? Or are you saying that if you trade Quintana, well, we're trading one of the best pitchers in the American League and you just can't do that? So it's an interesting situation they're going to have to decide in the offseason. And, you know, I think it's going to end up being that they're going to go with the 4 lefties and then probably find a righty to fill out the rotation.
And that's, you know, not to be negative, but that's an interesting time to go with such an arrangement or have such an arrangement. Just we've seen the dearth of left-handed power hitters in baseball in general. That was really apparent at the All-Star game and the Home Run Derby and the All-Star game starting lineup. So, you know, at a time where
I think Adam Dunn became, you know, a needed commodity by the A's at the end of August there because you just don't have that. You know, that's something the Sox can go out and look for in the offseason now is a left-handed bat to hit behind or hit in between Abreu and obviously Yael Garcia. Quintana he's got a 5-year deal, $21 million with options for 19 and 20. So that's a pretty darn team-friendly deal for a high-end pitcher like that guy. So, you know, you look at that and say, we could get a huge return, or do you say, well, why would we give away something we're just going to have to go out and fill again, so let's keep these guys at the top.
Right, and you're not trading Sale, and you're not trading...
No chance. And Danks is just, you know, I think with the contract he has is tough to trade. But it's just harder to trade than a guy like Quintana, obviously.
Yeah. We've gotten a little stat-centric on this podcast, Merck, so I do have to know one last stat here that's interesting to look here these last couple weeks of the season. But Jose Abreu, who we've talked about pretty much every week on this podcast for good reason, tied the rookie record, the team's rookie record for home runs over the weekend. But, you know, what's interesting to me, another advanced number is the OPS plus on Baseball Reference, where, again, it's measured on park factors and the league average and all that. And he could be the first rookie who qualifies for the batting title with an OPS plus of 170 or higher since, and only the second all-time and the first since, Shoeless Joe Jackson in 1911.
I did not cover him, by the way. I was not covering baseball at that point when she was.
Is that right?
I think I started the year after, actually.
You were still on your internship.
That puts in perspective with
Mike Trout here 2 years ago, which, again, nothing to take away from Trout because Trout's the all-around player that Abreu is not. But that puts Abreu's offensive input in some great perspective. This has been a really special season to watch. 30 home runs, 30 doubles, 100 RBI. Only three other guys have done that in their rookie year. Really special stuff.
Yeah, you know, Konerko referred to him recently as a thinking man's hitter, and he said as good as a power hitter he is, and he's an accomplished power hitter. He tied Ron Kittle's rookie record of 35 home runs in a single season. He's even a better hitter. And it's funny, I asked Todd Steverson, the hitting coach, a while back in Boston, about Abreu hitting 300 in a season. I think he was hitting about 270 then, and Steverson kind of laughed. He said, well, I'm not going to put that kind of pressure on the kid. You know, he's a great hitter. You know, he has a plan. That's been the key thing with Abreu is that he talked about this, that, like, from when he gets up in the morning, he has a set plan every day. And now the kid's going to finish probably in the 320s, and if not, in the high 318, 319. So, yeah, an incredible year. I mean, in fairness to other rookies, you know, Abreu came in with quite a bit of experience, but he is better than the Sox expected, and as the Sox have said, they had pretty high expectations when they brought him in.
Yeah. Well, if Paul Konerko calls you a thinking man's hitter, I mean, that's coming from the ultimate thinking man.
You get the trophy in that case then, I think.
Yeah. One last thing, Merck. Did you meet Garth Brooks? Garth Brooks shows up to take batting practice off Robin Ventura. Merck is a huge Garth Brooks fan. I think you saw all 12 shows at Allstate Arena, didn't you? Was it 12 shows, 11 shows? Whatever it was, you were at every one, were you not?
It was 11 shows, and I saw all but 10 of them.
Oh, okay. Well, did you get to meet Garth Brooks?
I did not. It was done under the cloak of darkness in the afternoon. No, he had, like, that was it was Friday when the Sox eventually had a rainout, and he had a 6. He did two shows tonight, which is kind of crazy seeing the energy he puts into it. And he had a 6 o'clock show in Allstate, which is out by O'Hare, so you know he was gone before we even got out there. But it's too bad. Robin did say, you know, Robin's known him back from their Oklahoma State days together, and Mark Parent, the White Sox bench coach, is a good friend of Garth Brooks. And Robin did say his bat is slowing down a little bit, but he had a good time. Him and Trisha Yearwood and the band came out, and they took it. Judging by my Facebook feed with some of my friends I have who are with the White Sox, he took pictures of literally everyone in the organization that afternoon, it looks like, too. So a good time had by all.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. And I saw a video. It looks like it is a little slower bat speed, but he's still got a pretty good swing. You know, you think back to
he was a big deal
in the 90s. Training. He used to show up at spring trainings and whatnot.
Yeah, he was with Robin said that he was with the Mets in 2000. I think he was the Padres or the Royals he was with another time. Yeah, the one thing they said is that is as good. It's kind of like what you hear Jim Tomey describe as good a player he is. He's a better person, and Robin and a couple other people who met him said as good of an entertainer as he is, he's a nicer person. So that was good to hear. Good to hear they all had fun, and I guess he shagged a few fly balls and had a good break from the performing there.
Well, he temporarily owned Chicago for a couple weeks there with those 11 shows, but now he's gone now, he has left. He gives ownership back to you, Merck, and we're all your podcast listeners are rooting for you to make a recovery from your high fever there. And we want to thank you for doing this podcast. I want to thank you all for tuning in. It's been MLB.com Extra, Chicago White Sox edition.
Catch all of the second half action on MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service. Watch every out-of-market game streamed live online or on the go in true HD. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 14 subscription, allowing you to watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.